For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning, dragon bodhisattvas, lake dragons. We're in the Lincoln Square of Zendo, and cloud dragons roaming the clouds in the online Zendo. Seems that our zazen is pretty still this morning. We settled that we had too many people. So I just would like to welcome Izat and Adam, and I haven't seen you for a little while, Sandra, so thank you for joining us. So in the stillness of Zazen, in the time of nowness, and the place of here-ness, we gather our hearts and minds into one practice body. And as most of you know, I'm Hogetsu Lori, and I'm a guiding teacher. I guess you might say I'm the guiding teacher here at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. And this is my first month on the job. It's a little weird because, like, I've been here for 20 years, but first month in this job. So I don't know if you all remember starting a new job, but that's what I'm in the midst of, and we're all doing this together. Next Sunday, June 30th, we're going to have Zazen as usual at 9:30, but we will do something called, instead of a Dharma talk, we'll do something called a Shosan ceremony. And that is a traditional ceremony that's of inquiry and response. So this often occurs at the end of an intensive period of practice, but I thought it might be a nice way to cap off my first month on the job. And basically, it gives everyone in the room, if you wish, you can always pass, if you wish, you're invited to ask me a Dharma question from the heart. I might ask you a question back, and what we will engage in this process of inquiry and response. And that's also true of folks in the online room. So I'm a guiding teacher of dragons. And in Zen speak, dragons are devoted, sincere seekers of the way. Sometimes training monks are called dragons and elephants. No, could have named this like ancient elephants, and I wouldn't have wanted that. But we're dragons. And dragons are devoted to this way of awakening, are seeking together this way of awakening and living for the benefit of all life. We hear that life calling to us, and we respond. We're devoted to awakening. Dragons are devoted to awakening and living that awakened awareness, embodying it, and enacting a liberated awareness in everyday life. This is the Bodhisattva dragon way. Awakening some deep truth, or maybe just remembering something we've always known. And our dragon community, our practitioners who are helping each other to live fully and caringly and authentically and peaceful, moment by moment. And you know, we do need help from everyone, each other, actually everybody's supporting us. That cardinal is supporting us. However, there is a lot that in this world that wants to take our attention and monetize it, commodify it, and shape it in a certain way. So it's good to have friends, Dharma friends, Dharma Dragon friends, to help each other. Come to the Zendo, come to your cushions, float in the cloud, practicing this awareness practice we call Zazen. However, Zazen is not simply seated meditation. It is your life. Our meditation secretly, sometimes not so secretly, extends into how we show up in our relationship with ourselves internally and with the world, which what appears to be external, how we show up with everything that we tend to see as other. Sometimes even ourselves, some part of yourself, you're really good. You're saying that. Or you're really worthless. And express it. These are called precepts, tentatively. We'll call them precepts for the purpose of this talk. You know, but we're not going to, they're not going to be like 10 commandments that we force on everyone. We offer them. They're not unlike commandments because I think every wisdom tradition has a set of values that are basically dedicated to the support and the good of everyone. That's usually a core practice of any religious tradition. But in Buddhism, we have these, in Soto Zen, we have these 16 Bodhisattva precepts. And in thinking about these precepts, lately I've been inspired by a book by Diane Rossetto called Waking Up to What You Do. I know people intuitively get what that might be about, but do you ever think you were doing something in one way and realize that, like, it was, like, not that way or not perceived that way or not impacting the world in that way? Like, sometimes I'll take out my phone and take pictures, and I started thinking about, did I ask that tree for permission? How do I do that? You know, like there can be a kind of, like I'm sure the person who invented plastics didn't think I'm doing something that might harm our planet and basically destroy it. They probably thought, I'm making this, isn't this cool? Like we can make these containers and people don't have to wash dishes, they just throw them out. They forgot to think about, oh, what do we do with those? So, in this book, Waking Up to What You Do, Diane Rossetto also has like a subtitle, A Zen Practice for Meeting Every Situation with Intelligence and Compassion. Seems like pretty good practice. I think probably most of us are into it a little bit. And so one of these practices she encourages is taking up precepts or vows or intentionalities about how we show up. And I'd like to just share today one that has been rolling around in my consciousness, especially as I've been moving in, been drawn in by the tractor beam of this new job, this transition. And her take on this is, I vow to take up the way of meeting everyone on equal ground. How does one do that? how do you know if you're doing that? But it seems pretty good. So I'm trying that, and I'm aware that the world might give me some feedback that I might need some help keeping that going. But this phrasing, I take up, so it's not even like I vow, it's like I take up, I embrace the way of meeting everyone on equal ground. One thing I like about our Zendo is, you know, on some meditation places, the teacher's in some higher seat. And maybe that's good because you can see them a little better, but I kind of like it that we can come closer to see each other. This phrasing encourages us to meet the world freely without prejudgment, comparison, prejudice. You know, Zazen, you might say, is expressed as showing up as an ally and friend to all beings, or even all being, even molecules, things that appear inanimate. And my understanding of Diane Rossetto's encouragement is unequal ground does not mean not to perceive the uniqueness of each person's experience and each person's, for lack of a better word, social location, history, things that we can never fully know. We don't deny that with this equal grounding. But it is, I think, an encouragement to kind of see ways that we can actually see everyone and everything as worthy of care and respect, and meeting life not fooled by appearances. You know? And look at somebody and you're like, I'm sizing you up right away. We can't help but sort of do that because our brains like to make comparisons. Our biology kind of wants to do that, but we don't have to be stuck in it. We don't have to be hypnotized by, let's say, my cultural and personal biases and conditioning. So when we're sitting, we can see how that arises. And then we have this little encouragement of taking up a way, embracing a way, of meeting everyone on equal ground for the rest of this life and beyond. Why not? But of course, if you don't like this, throw it in the garbage. So I would like to offer a poem that I recently discovered by a poet who I really don't know anything about. So I'm not a student of poetry or literature. I am an enjoyer. You could say I'm even a dilettante. You know, I embrace that identity fully. Super dilettante. Well, that's a little extra, right? Like, super. I'm like a, you know, not like an ordinary dilettante. So I'm an ordinary dilettante, hopefully. But even that, I won't cling to. Maybe I'm a poor dilettante. I only know, like, one poem by this person. But we can endlessly think about what it means to meet someone on equal ground, or to meet life on equal ground. Sometimes poetry just, to me, expands our view and brings forth a kind of resonance that helps us. So I hope that this helps everyone. Probe a little bit into this possibility of meeting everyone on equal ground. And this poet is Naomi Shihab Nye. I don't know if anyone's heard of her.
She writes kids' books too.
Have you used them in your class or with your students?
Yeah, they've read some of her stuff for sure.
Great. I've not read her children's books, so I'll have to.
She writes, like, it's children's poetry, too, but yeah, so both.
Maybe this is a child's poem that I didn't even know. Could be. I'm going to read it twice, one using the gender pronouns used by the poet to honor her work, and then maybe I'll modify that a little bit. Naomi Shihab-Nye is also a Palestinian American. Her father immigrated to America as a refugee after being evicted from homeland. And I must say, I don't think I've ever read anything by a Palestinian American poet, much less female poet. So this poem is called Red Brocade. Goes like this. The Arabs used to say, when a stranger appears at your door, feed him for 3 days before asking who he is. That way, he'll have strength. You'll be such good friends you don't care. Let's go back to that. Rice? Pine nuts? Here. Take the red brocade pillow. My child will serve water to your horse. No, I was not busy when you came. I was not preparing to be busy. That's the armor everyone puts on to pretend they have a purpose in the world. I refuse to be claimed. Your plate is waiting. We will sip fresh mint tea. Or we will sniff fresh mint tea into you, fresh mint into your tea. Maybe our Tenzel will sniff some mint in the garden for our tea after this talk. So I'll just repeat one more time. The Arabs used to say, when a stranger appears at your door, feed them for 3 days before asking who they are, where they've come from, where they're headed. That way they'll have strength enough to answer. Or by then, you'll be such good friends you don't care. You know, meeting people on equal ground is meeting everyone as this kind of stranger. You don't know who anyone is in some ways. But our practice is to welcome and get to know them without maybe interrogation. And accept the answer when someone's ready. Or if not, then we can think about it and enjoy the moment together. The bird song. This is kind of like Zazen. We forget the habits of grasping. And then we offer what we have, rice, pine nuts. Here, take the brocade pillow. My child will serve water to your horse. So it's like we maybe give the best pillow in the house to the stranger. The stranger inside and the stranger who appears to be outside. Who appears to be knocking at the door. And so this is a practice of generosity, of spirit, and of material things. In this little section, no, I was not busy when you came. I was not preparing to be busy. That's the armor everyone put on to pretend they had a purpose in the world. You know, many of us know this famous Zen story about the one who is not busy, as being like something great. But this is like not even preparing to be busy, you know, of having just the time to be here and now present with what's in front of us. Our lives are all full. We have probably many things in our schedule or calendars But do you remember what it's like to be welcomed, as if somebody isn't trying to shove you out the door the minute you got there, or isn't kind of too busy? No. It's really a beautiful way to go about life. And I refuse to be claimed. Such an interesting line, you know, of an assertion of a kind of self. To me, that's a little bit like what we do when we assert ourselves in zazen, when we make the choice to sit down on the cushion. In other words, I will be liberated and free. And then this ends, your plate is waiting. We will snip fresh mint into your tea. Like, things are available, the soothing mint that is fresh and nourishing is available. There's actually some in the garden if you want to snip some on the way out. I got a text from my tenant on the first floor last night, and he said, "Is there any mint in the garden?" Literally, I'm writing this Dharma talk, and I get this text. And I said, "There is. It's on the east side by the rose bushes." So, wouldn't it be nice if this is how we showed up in life? And also not beat ourselves up if we might feel like we're falling short. You know, this is something that we co-create in community. So maybe somebody is like, "I'm too busy." That's okay. But we don't have to be busy with that. But we don't have to be fooled by it. You can maybe say, "It's okay if you think that. But let's meet each other. Let's have a cup of tea." So that's enough. And for me, and I wonder if anyone else or anyone online in person has anything you'd like to offer, or comments or questions about people around or showing up or snipping mint. So thank you all very much.
So that was a wonderful talk, and I have two comments. The first is your point about things being seemingly inanimate. I chuckled because it reminded me of this really fascinating debate I had with my girlfriend Cam when we went to the Art Institute, where we started to try to decide whether paintings were animate or inanimate. So that was a lot of fun. But this question of showing up to people on equal ground reminds me of when I go play Magic the Gathering at the card shop on Friday nights. It's a really fascinating, rotating, because you're playing somebody new every 20 minutes, and the game is this vehicle of, like, everybody just shows up in different ways, and it's been really interesting to experience being each game being something different is happening. So I'll have to figure out relatively soon, is this somebody who's just learning the game? And if that's the case, then maybe I play a slightly different way, or a little bit more patient, or, you know, offer a suggestion or a reminder of the rules. And then if somebody, knows the game really well and is really jovial and fun, then, you know, we're using the game as just a way of talking to each other. And then it's like a common language, and we're just, you know, it's really easy to talk to each other. But the one that was really memorable was the other night, the last round I had, which felt like I was a little bit confused because I had done really well that evening. And this was the final match when we were playing for this special card, which I didn't really care about, but my opponent was this kid. It turned out he was like 15 years old. And I didn't quite know. I was like, well, is this a random thing? Or like I didn't know how to show up at first for this kid. But as I started talking to him, he really saw the game incredibly well. He was very, very good. So it was this transition in my head of, okay, I'm not finding this balance of being in some sort of, being an adult, being a role model in this scenario, but also challenging him at the same time of like, he's really good and the best way I can support him is to play him at my full capacity while also like, challenging him to have him show up at his full capacity at the same time. But it was really, so that when I go on Friday nights, I'm just really noticing that like every game is like you're calibrating about what kind of interaction it's going to be each time.
Adjusting.
Yeah.
So that's a magic game. How do you think he was viewing you?
He, I think, viewed me as a fun person to play with. That he was impressed by my deck, and I think he felt good that I was encouraging him so much. Like I could tell he was playing with a lot of joy. So I think he viewed me as. Well, that's an interesting question because it makes me wonder: am I just projecting what I thought he saw of me, or how did he actually see me? And I actually don't know. I don't know the difference between those two.
Good. So this is what we explore in ourselves then. What are we making up about the stories we make up about the world and ourselves? And then also, given the fact that we're great story makers, how do we create and show up in a certain way to allow a story to evolve creatively? You know, I really enjoy it, Bo, when you're techno or in the room, because you have this improv experience, and I always feel it. Like, I always feel like, Bo's gonna, like, support me. And I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So you're doing improv in this magic game.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much, Dylan. So this practice begins with starting to observe, how am I showing up? Just the question itself is awakening, is that seeking.
So much to think about for this talk, and that poem is amazing, right? Like, and it makes me think about, like, this piece of welcoming strangers, you know, is very, like, what she's proposing is, like, sort of radically opposite of, like, how I grew up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, I think, in this era of, like, stranger danger.
Mm-hmm.
And so any stranger, you know, anyone asking directions or anything as you're walking along the street, you're, like, very wary of them automatically. And I think that's pretty prevalent in, not to get too, but in American culture, I really think it is, like, you know, so many stories are like the stranger appearing and upending things in a really negative way, right? You know, not every story, but I just feel like that's a prevalent sort of theme. And, you know, right now, it'd be kind of remiss not to say, like, that strangers showing up at borders are, like, completely driving the political conversation in a negative way. Like, people are using that to push, like, I think, in my opinion, like, really dangerous ideas and so forth. So this idea of, like, instead the stranger, it's like a welcome, like, respite from busy, you know, like, oh, thank you for reminding me, like, I can do all this beautiful stuff and we can just sit down and relax and I don't even need to know your name. It's just such a, like, and there's no danger in your presence, you know, and I don't need to know your past. It's just the assumption of, like, it's almost the assumption of Buddha Dharma, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're the same, we're in this together, etc. Like, So, gosh, you know, that's such a good push for me, you know, to continue to sort of, or to practice that, which is not an easy thing necessarily when you grow up, I think, with a lot of those stories of the danger of strangers, but I think that's a story too.
Yeah. But to be open to what's in front of us right here now, because some strangers could be dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. 100.
It'd be like, oh, there's a gun there.
Yeah.
But our best chance is to pay attention, and also to pay attention to internal and external. And what's amazing, there are a lot of people in Chicago and in this world who actually are welcoming strangers from the border.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's a really beautiful thing, actually. And, you know, and some people can use that and say, those people aren't welcoming them, and those people are.
Mm.
And, you know, then it gets to be divisive, but to kind of be like, oh, of course people are afraid of strangers. We grew up in the stranger danger culture.
Mm-hmm.
And what can we do to encourage them to be confident enough to welcome? And, you know, we have strangers inside ourselves we don't want to welcome. And those can be quite dangerous.
Mm.
So, or wonderful. Sometimes you don't like the wonderful strangers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, David Ray. I see David Ray online. Hello.
Hi, Hogetsu. Thank you. Thank you for the talk and this wonderful, really interesting conversation. I have to say this. So in Greek, the word xenos means stranger or foreigner, but it also means guest or host. It's the same word. So that's the assumption. The first time I went to Greece, I really experienced that, you know? But there's a thing that's in the poem and that you highlighted that really struck me, that the poem is saying, in some way, I have to be present for myself, or as you said, I have to assert myself. I have to say I won't be claimed. I have to say no, I'm not busy. No, my attention doesn't get to be vampirized by somebody else. And that it is an act of self-assertion. Wow, to commit to practice, and that's a little surprising because I think we all know versions of Buddhism that say, oh, it's only about, you know, getting rid of the ego, destroying the ego, as if I could find that and do it. So that's really a big piece for me. Thank you for that.
Thank you. And I think Sandra had something to offer.
The discussion about strangers and fear of strangers reminded me of something I read years and years ago when I barely knew anything and I was just starting to sit on my own. And in the book, the author said, there are really only two powers in the world, those who are not afraid to kill and those who are not afraid to die.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that, it struck me so deeply, I burst into tears because I could discern the truth of that. If you are not afraid to die, you are more powerful than anybody else out there. And that kind of speaks to this being able to welcome. You really can't welcome wholeheartedly while you're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of a time, again, years ago, that I was out hiking. And, I mean, it wasn't really a secluded place, but I was far enough out on the trail that there weren't a lot of people around. And I came up towards a man who said, excuse me, but I'm very afraid. I'm not quite sure how he said it, but he let me know that he was having difficulty with being up on a hill, being at a higher elevation, and trying to make his way down. So he's probably having some vertigo or something like that. And could I walk him down? And, of course, you know, there weren't people around, and I thought, is this safe? But to walk away seems so, so not right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I held his hand and we walked down the hill. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a very small thing. It cost me nothing except just a moment of, is this okay? But for me, a lot of the practice is learning how to, you know, accept the impermanence of who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, that if fear is rising up, I'm really holding on to something about myself. Mm-hmm. And I feel I need to defend it. And the more powerful place for me to be is in just being wide open.
Well, thank you. This was something I was thinking about when I was thinking about this talk about our embodied showing up in an embodied way, right? And, you know, one of the practices of working with the body is to realize the fear that might arise and learn to soothe that and to continue and to be present and stable in the midst of that. And so, you know, you could look at your fear in that moment and regulate yourself, you could say, just enough to reach out your hand. And you don't know, you didn't know what that hand was going to do. And that person maybe might forever be grateful to you. I don't know if you ever kept in touch, but this is this practice of not being so busy that we can just settle with our fears or our xenophobia or whatever conditioning is around and okay, what's the response? And there might have been something like, I can't do that right now. And sometimes that's who we are. That's not being claimed as well. So, thank you very much. Anastasia.
I'm having a physical response to some of what we were talking about. And I don't know how exactly to say it, so I'll just use the words that are coming to me. The beauty of being able to welcome is beautiful. And the fear, mm-hmm. I think, is neither good nor bad.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, even just because of our history, like any farming planet,
mm-hmm.
There have been cultures that have been welcoming, and they are, some of them are no longer.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are, but they welcomed, that was their natural, that was their normal, that's what they did, and so they welcomed the stranger. And fear, I don't know how that played into it, how that could have played into it. Historically, it's already happened, but how do you welcome from a deep heart, soul, earth, air, mm-hmm. elemental way, and the trust part? Because there are strangers who are absolutely up to no good.
Absolutely.
they are. And so, and I want to believe, as I said on the next slide, I want to believe that gold as an elemental,
mm-hmm.
that thing that is so amazing and precious and keeps me connected
mm-hmm.
in a different way, is not going to be in some way taken away from me and abused.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so navigating that, because I know that my ancestors are pretty much maybe all of us in some way, have been welcoming. That was our thing.
Yes.
And then that gets subsumed, not even subsumed, crushed.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you navigate the fear? Yeah, so stranger. And so the awareness part for me, in some ways, I think that means a lot
mm-hmm.
in any given moment. So how can I claim? How can I stay with that welcoming peace?
Mm-hmm.
And also kind of allow, if maybe in that moment, my senses, my body is saying no.
Mm-hmm.
Does that counteract this welcome? Because I don't think it does, but I think it gets very confusing and the layers of cultural blah, blah, blah. But I just needed to say that. I think the welcoming part is amazing, and I want that back.
Right, and it's been taken from us, from many of us, in gross and subtle ways, and historically. So we pay homage to that in our practice, too, to that history, and to our project of liberation. So that liberation, I think I mentioned earlier, that this does not mean meeting people on equal ground, not taking into account all of this, but it means paying attention to your body, you know, and to your welcoming spirit, and to fear. Sometimes it's like, I can't do that, and that, or actually, that person is dangerous. I wasn't pointing at anyone over there, maybe Buddha. He might be dangerous. But when you welcome a dangerous person, you treat them as a dangerous person. And you're like, actually, that gun does not belong here. Or, and we have Sangha. This is why I think community is very important to support us, because we also do need protection from things in the world, and to rely on and to take refuge in ourselves and in our communities and build community that is safe. And that's not a good project because I read a poem here on Ancient Dragon. That's very deep, so I want to thank you for bringing that to the forefront. And so, you know, this practice that we do is serious business, and it's very difficult, and it's painful, because when we unravel the fear, you know, sometimes when we're unraveling fear, we unravel ancestral and communal experiences of both being people who made others afraid and hurt them, and also being hurt ourselves and afraid of people. So it is complex. And no easy answer. But the answer is in the questioning, like we're all bringing up. So inquiry and response come up together. Have we had enough inquiry? And enough response for today? I think this would be a great time for us to move into the next phase, which would be chanting Bodhisattva vows, and then we'll have announcements from our wonderful Eno. Eno is our Zen speak for the head of the meditation hall, coordinator of our meditation hall, Jerry. And I just want to remind everyone that next week we'll have Zazen as usual, and then we'll have this possibility to bring the Dharma question from the heart to our practice. And nourishing each other in this process of mutual discovery. So thank you all very much.
And the vows can be found on page 36 of the chant book.
Okay, so may I ask a vow question?
Oh, you may ask a vow question. This is our Do-on, Zen speak, for the person who rings the bells and keeps time.
And as we do these different temple jobs, sometimes questions arise, so I find it's just best to ask. Are we doing, after you retrieve the zaga?
Oh, it's all good.
Mm-hmm. Are we doing four bells? We're not exiting the Zendo.
No.
Okay.
Actually, I'll go up during the vows. We're chanting the Bodhisattva vows three times. During that, I go up, and I'm sorry that I have a foot under recovery, so I can't do full prostrations today. But I'll go up and do three bows. I'll pick up my bowing mat called the Zagu, and then I'll step back and bow. There'll be no bells during that.
Okay,
we're all just hanging out here. And then I'll come back and bow to the cushion, bow to the room, sit down, no bells. And then we'll have announcements. And then after announcements, we'll all stand, put our cushions back together, you know, get our zendo organized, and stand up. and then we'll just stand and bow together. There'll be two bells, and then we'll exit the room clockwise. Those who wish to participate in our work period, you can do a little cleanup around your house and then have those of you in the cloud. You can polish the clouds. And then we'll have tea. How does that sound? Does that seem like what we do?
Sounds good. It seems like what we do.
And now we'll see if that happens.
So on that note, I just want to thank everyone online. And you can still hang out with us while we do all this other stuff. But I'm going to leave the cloud from my personal device so I can get up and do some maps. So thank you.
Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it.